Our next speaker is Mr. Isaac Madsen. He is a social science PhD candidate from Washington State University. He is going to talk about visualizing ammonia toxicity symptoms. Okay, so you can start in 2 minutes or so when I say so. But yeah, I'll stand up 12 minutes when it's all almost time and we can wrap up the presentation. In the next 1 or 2 minutes, you have the pointer here.
Just tell me when to go.
Yeah.
Are you guys enjoying this so far? The meetings? Day one? It's my third day here. I came on Thursday, so I'm tired now. Ready to go?
Yeah, I can see the first speaker, but the second speaker, Mr. Parvez left already, because we will use the time whenever we have extra time to ask the previous speaker in case something comes up.
I have to go recruit for Washington State at 2 o'clock, so,
okay.
So I won't be able to stay long.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Tired of day one. Too much happening, right? No, that's fine. Hopefully it'll be exciting enough you won't even want to.
I think Mr. Madsen, you're ready to go. We're a few seconds away from your time, but yeah, please.
Okay. Great. Hi, my name is, as was mentioned, is Isaac Madsen, and I'm a PhD candidate in soil sciences at Washington State University, and I'm going to talk about visualizing ammonia toxicity symptoms specifically in canola, and I'll get to how this relates to fertility in a second. In the Northwest, in dryland agriculture, wheat is king. It's the number one crop that is grown. It's almost entirely what is grown in dryland agriculture, but recently there have been initiatives to increase the amount of canola that is grown for biodiesel and in general for having more oil crops. But one of the great benefits for this for farmers is actually breaking pest cycles, because you can get Roundup Ready canola, and also breaking compaction layers with the taproot compaction layers that were grown when there was more tillage in the system. Now it's moved mostly to no-till. One of the challenges with canola in the Northwest is that we've had a lot of trouble with establishment. And there's several factors for this. It can be frost damage or cold damage. It can also be just too dry if our rains come too late in the winter. But one of the potential reasons is also that you can have ammonia toxicity due to your fertilizer banding. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. So this is actually quite well known. That there is ammonia toxicity due to fertilizer banding. Back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, a lot of studies were done with this, especially with corn, and that's where they came along with the guidelines to go 2 inches below the seed and 2 inches to the side. There was also studies where they banded with the seed and showed that different plants react differently to the toxicity. Although this is well known and relatively well studied, all this was done with destructive sampling. So what I'm looking at right now is what they would do is they would plant the seeds and put the fertilizer in there and break it apart and look at the symptoms. And what I'm doing is visualizing it so you can watch a single plant in time and space as the symptoms develop. So here's my objective, and it's to visually measure the occurrence of root symptoms in time and space to increasing rates of fertilizer. And I'll just go through the methods of how I did this really briefly in two stages. The first stage, just talking about the experimental experimental design and the root box setups we are using, and then also the image collection and processing. So this is actually an office scanner. You can get these at Office Depot or wherever you want for pretty cheap, probably cheapest lab equipment you'll ever buy. And we epoxied a plexiglass box to the front of it, and that's what this is. Those are actually thermal couple wires coming out of there, but you can see on the left that you have some canola plants growing, and this is what we did our studies in. This is how we set it up, actually. So we had the soil surface there, and then 2.5 centimeters below the surface is where we place the canola seeds, and 5 centimeters below that is where we put our line of urea pellets. So this is cross-sectional. So if you had a drill running through the field, it's as if we put a scanner down across it. We had a control, a low, and a high treatment, and those come out roughly to 33.7 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and 63.7 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And this is based on a 19 centimeter row spacing. So obviously, the actual exposure of the seeds will change depending on your row spacing. We used an Amanda winter canola variety that's common around the Palouse, and we used Palouse silt loam soil, another very common soil. And we took that from Pullman, Washington, passed it through a 2 millimeter sieve, and then wet it up to 20% moisture before loading it into our root boxes. For image collection, we collected images every 4 hours. This was automated using a software called ViewScan, and we scanned at 1,890 pixels per centimeter, or 4,800 DPI. We spatially aligned the images using ArcMap, which is a GIS software, and we used ArcMap's measure tool to actually measure where the symptoms were occurring. So I'll get on to results here, and this is a brief video of this happening. What you see up here is actually where the canola seed is, and down here is where the urea pellet was originally placed. It's dissolved in this picture. And the whole video takes place over around 150 hours. You see the root growing down here. And what I want you to notice is that the tip right there, it begins to shrink back. A little later you get these lateral roots emerging. So this is not typical for canola. Usually the tap root would go much longer before you would get this lateral emergence happening. And you can see that this significantly changes the architecture once you lose that tap root. And that scale bar up there is 10 millimeters to give you a sense of perspective. This will be the same video, just really zoomed in so you can get a better look at some of these symptoms as they happen. Can see the root grow down. Watch the tip. Starts to shrink back. It actually starts turning brown, and or either brown or transparent, which we're assuming is necrosis happening. Got these laterals emerging. And in some places, it's a bit hard to see in this image, the root hairs will actually be dying back. So this method really allows us to look really closely at some of these symptoms as they're happening. So on to actually getting numbers out of this, because pictures are great and really fun, but it's better if we can have some numbers that we could get out of these images. And this is the first thing you notice is that you get this zone of non-proliferation where the roots won't even grow in there. And this lined up really well with the literature at about 15 millimeters from the urea pellet placement, where in the low fertilizer and the high fertilizer treatment, you won't see any roots growing. But in the control, you'll actually see roots growing through that zone, the same zone, without a problem. So onto the actual symptoms that we see on the root itself. What we have happening here is that in pictures A and B, those are at day 2, and C and D are at day 5. In pictures A and B, so pictures A and C are the same treatment. They're in the high treatment. And pictures B and D are in the control, and these are at the same space. So what I want you to notice first is that between picture B and D, the control plant grows through this zone, it's at the same depth from the seed and keeps growing and establishes healthy root hairs and everything. Whereas the treated plant grows and stops, and then we see all these other symptoms where you have these lateral roots developing. It's a bit hard, but on the left side, you can actually see some root hair dieback,
when you zoomed in really close, and then you have this shrinkage of the whole taproot and also some discoloration. So then these are just more pictures, but we actually got around to quantifying some of this. So this is the lateral development over time. So 61 hours was the average time at which you had apical growth stop, and then you can see within 20 hours of that you have, or I guess it was closer to 30 hours, you have the actual laterals begin to grow in both your low and your high treatments, whereas your control happens much later. So on the x-axis is time, and on the y-axis is the number of visible roots. This is a very similar graph, but here we have the distance from the apex in millimeters that shrinkage was occurring that you could see in the video, where from the root tip up it began to shrink back, and you can see the expansion of that symptom up the roots. And again, we weren't able to find a difference between the higher, the low treatment. The symptoms were very similar. So just sort of wrap it all up, the toxicity symptoms, we were able to detect them using this method. First off, we saw that soil zone of non-proliferation. These serious architectural modifications where you get really early lateral root emergence, and also these physiological stresses where it looks like you're getting necrosis. And we were able to map these over time, of course. We didn't see any difference between the fertilizer rates. My theory on this is that because we were going cross-sectionally to the row, they're both hitting one pellet of urea, and so you're probably really what you're getting here is the damage that you will see when you hit one pellet of urea with a canola root. And the toxicity symptoms were detected at some distance from the fertilizer band, so this is really important when we're thinking in terms of how we're designing drills, is that you put enough space in there. The other thing that I think is maybe the most interesting takeaway from all this is that you can have your stand established. You might have great plants in there, but you might be modifying your architecture of your roots to such an extent that you won't get the benefits that you were looking for in the first place. So if you're growing canola because you have a plow pan and you want to break it up, and you're still banding your fertilizer directly below the seed, you might as well be growing wheat roots because you're going to get more of a fibrous root system. Anyways, so that's all I have for right now. I would like to thank Washington State, where I'm working on my degree, the Inspire IGERT, which is an NSF program, REACH, which is a USDA NIFA program, and WOX, which is a Washington Oilseeds Cropping Research Program, where we've done a lot of work on figuring out how we can grow canola in dryland agriculture. And that's thank you. Questions?
We have time for several questions. Question from the audience?
Yeah.
What's next?
What's next? I've been doing a lot of grower day, field days. That's the big thing. I would really like to get at what is going on with the rate, and so I've actually designed the study to go parallel to the so if you had a drill growing through the soil, this was cross-sectional. Now I'm going parallel with increasing rates of fertilizer to sort of check if my hypothesis that what's happening here is that you're just hitting one pellet and killing it is actually true. And when I left Washington, we had just wrapped up the first round of that, and it appears that we're getting a really nice gradation of symptoms. So I'm really excited about that, and we're loading all of this into GIS so we can actually do spatial analytics on it as well.
So how did you go from the image to the quantitative aspect?
So that was done very simplistically, where you have a measure tool that you can use in GIS and sitting there and making the measures and just recording them into Excel, actually. But a lot of what I've worked on is actually making that so it's automated, so essentially using remote sensing processes to do that. And I haven't presented any of that here, but that's actually how I established that 15 millimeter zone. Originally was through essentially a remote sensing algorithm that would tell me what was root and what was soil, and then building rings out from the fertilizer band and looking at that. Yeah, very similar graphs to what we had. So.
I have a question myself.
Yeah.
Were you able to measure the ammonium concentration? You know, where the root zone of the control, do you have the low and the medium and the control? What's the concentration?
So, I haven't figured out a way to measure the ammonia as the experiment is going. I've done post-experimental dissections of the experiment where I just did a KCl extraction and looked at how much ammonium there was, and you get really, really high spikes. I forget what the numbers are exactly, but very high spikes where you had the band. And the reason that I didn't present any of those is that when we were coring them out, we were using a core that was about 7 millimeters across, and we would only actually hit the band with one of those cores, so you couldn't really interpolate the data very accurately. So the most recent version, I used a 3 millimeter core, and I'm hoping to get a bigger spread of data so that I can actually interpolate between those points. And then you can do really cool spatial analysis of where the symptom is occurring in relation to the actual concentrations in the soil. But I would love to measure it as it occurs. That would be exciting.
Is there some also salt injury issue when you're talking about or from ammonium food?
Yeah.
Salt-related?
Yeah.
Something that would be really interesting.
And also just radical pH changes. As the urea band dissolves, the pH can spike from like 6 to 9.
All right.
Is that
thank you.
Thank you.